it's not going to result in a lawsuit. Certainly, the industry has not been so reluctant to go to court when they, and that's their right. But I have to be focused on trying to implement this law the best I can.
Okay. Do you have any kind of timeline for the 2015 proposal?
Fall? Yes. Before 2015.
Finalized or
proposed?
Proposed.
You said manageable trajectory. Yeah, no,
we're kind of going through that process right now, trying to balance all these things. But, again, if we want to get on this manageable trajectory, if we want to start giving kind of signals early, the sooner we get the 2015 proposal out, the better. And that's all I'll say right now.
Well, you said manageable trajectory, and you said you wanted to figure out what that means. Mm-hmm. What is your definition?
My definition of manageable trajectory is that we have a steady growth in the overall biofuels space, and we're fuel neutral. We're kind of agnostic in terms of what fuels are used to meet the objectives, but that it has a steady growth over time, and where the market is able to move those fuels and people use them. Keep in mind, I mean, it does the country, the society, the economy no good if these fuels aren't used. They're not going to be reducing emissions if they're not used. So that would be how I would define it. Now what? I'm not ready to quantify what that means. We made our projections, which, by the way, are way more than in terms of higher level ethanol blends that were used in 2013. That's another thing that gets lost, is that our range was between 100 and 300 million gallons of E85 sold in 2014, and at the time we wrote that represented up to a tripling of what was consumed in 2013. That's a pretty big growth in 1 year. So we are projecting volumes beyond this so-called saturation point. You wouldn't know it by the reporting, but we are. And we're asking for comment. Is that reasonable? Is that what reasonable growth looks like? And we're hearing, no, that's not reasonable. That's way too much. And we're hearing, no, that's not reasonable. That's way too little. And we'll have to decide what the data shows before the end of the day.
What are the odds that the EPA will actually change its decision? Is that possible?
Absolutely. That's why we go through a public comment period. This is not a sham.
I'm not saying it is a sham.
No, I know.
I'm saying, what are the odds? When has it been done in the past?
Frequently.
Is it okay? There is precedent.
Absolutely. Of course, a whole range of EPA. Sorry. Enough.
That's
of that.
What he wants to do with reporters.
No, I can only talk about the space that I'm responsible for, the kind of engines and cars and trucks, and I would say nearly every time we have finalized a rule, it's different from our proposal based on public comment. So, because I'm on the record here, I'm not going to give you an odds, but I'm just going to express facts in terms of our history, that our final rules are frequently different than our proposals. And that's our job. We're supposed to listen, right? That's what you pay us to do, is to look at the information and make our best judgment as possible. And by the way, when we wrote the 2014 proposal, that was written in the middle of 2013. So things have changed. Predictions have changed on gasoline demand and so on. And so we'll be using all the most recent data in making our final decisions.
Has the problems with TR made you a little bit more hesitant about the potential of the cellulosic industry to hit its numbers?
When you say problems, what do you mean?
TR has produced far less than it projected at the beginning of the year than what you initially took into account.
Well, let me say this. I'm not happy that the EPA has been wrong every year about this. And so we are looking at what processes we're using to estimate future cellulosic production. And it's hard. There's this considerable amount of uncertainty. And 2013 is another example of that. But I've asked my team to reassess how we go about doing this. I can tell you in 2013, the direction I gave my team was to be more conservative because of the history. And we were more conservative. And yet, you know what the result is. So we are taking another look at how we come up with these projections.
You wanted to thank Aaron again.
Aaron, there you are.
Nice to meet you.
You missed your award.
Yeah.
You know, you can get a wake-up call.
Let me just say, I'm thankful. Thankful I'm from a state that does not have tolls. They place the tolls every 3 miles. So there's that, there's traffic, stoplights.
Blah, blah.
I can't live down here. Not enough snow, either. Just saying. But, yeah, I know, that's why I was late. And also, I'm not a morning person.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
And thanks again for coming all the way to our hearing.
Well, that's how important it was.
Do you expect any RFS-related hearings in the near future that you might be held up and asked about RINs and the decision-making process for the 2014 RFS?
Yes.
Can you elaborate?
I want to get a picture.
Well, you know, it's a very active policy area. Things seem to have become less active on the Hill. I've been just reading the comments from the House leadership saying they're going to wait and see what EPA does. So we'll wait and see. But I'm always happy to. I mean, they've got a job under our Constitution, too, to oversee the executive branch. So we'll see.
You mentioned that the 2014 numbers could very well change after you process all this new information. Is there an expectation that they'll fall within the proposed ranges, at least, or could they even surpass the ranges? Or
I don't know. Hard to say. The data will drive that.
Okay. How big is the team that has to read all the comments?
I'm sorry?
How big is the team that has to read through all the comments?
About 10, about a dozen.
Okay. How many hours have you spent so far reading through the comments? And how do you weigh one comment versus the other?
That's a great question. I don't have an answer for you on the hours. But the comments that I think will have the most effect are the ones that really come with, you know, actual information and data and reasoning. Sometimes we get comments that are simply people expressing their opinion. Please do X. Please don't do Y. The most valuable comments to us are the ones that come with updated data, with actual analysis, and those are the ones that often make the most difference and are the most convincing.
How many did you say you got?
We've got about a team of 10 people.
But how many comments?
Comments. So we have around 6,000 kind of unique comments. And then total, it's over 100,000. So these might be postcard campaigns or phone call campaigns that we count every one of them.
6,000 unique.
But 6,000 unique ones. So this is a unique comment would be one where someone has, written their own opinion, their own comment, as opposed to a part of a nationwide campaign.
I'm sorry. You said that you wanted to provide some certainty to the industry. The question is, don't you think that having or starting a loop of yearly negotiation on RVOs will in fact deplete the value of the policy itself? I mean, the industry, we are a cellulosic technology provider. The comment that we are getting from our investors is, yes, but is cellulosic going to be there? Are going to be cellulosic volumes there? So the message that you are getting to the industry right now is a question mark for the next year. Is there a way in which you want to address or you can address this uncertainty that the industry is, percept?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, unfortunately, the law requires us to go through an annual rulemaking process. So there's a certain amount of uncertainty inherent in the law. What we're trying to do is come up with a more predictable way so people can better predict how EPA is going to set these standards in the future. And that's what we described in a proposal, and that's what we're getting comment on. And again, some people are going to say, we don't like that formula. or some people.
It's going to be a formula that drives towards the policy, or a formula that lies on the result of the market situation.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. But in that in and of itself, to the extent that, again, as we finalize this, we can, and the way we've looked at it today is we looked at what's the growth in E85 stations, you know, what's the growth in E85 consumption year to year, and we're going to use that to try to extrapolate what that means for the next year. And it's the same with cellulosic production, which has been much harder because it's such a nascent industry to figure out what those early production problems are going to be and so on. You know, but the cellulosic standard, you know, under the law, you know, is set based on these predictions. So there's just going to be a certain amount of uncertainty inherent with an emerging technology. But we are, I think Bob made the comment that this is the year where cellulosic is going to break through. There's certainly a lot of evidence that many plants are really kind of reaching that point. They haven't produced volume yet, and that's going to be, once they start producing in a stable way, that's when we can have more confidence. But we're optimistic that's the cellulosic volumes are will be coming.
You said that RINs should be used, their compliance tool, that's their purpose. Is there a RIN price that indicates to EPA that the compliance function is not working, or a level that it hits that causes EPA to feel that the tool is not working the way it's supposed to be working?
No. Obligated parties have two choices. They can meet their obligation by buying these credits, or they can meet their obligation by buying the liquid fuel. The law is agnostic as to which choice they make, so long as that choice is made and those obligations are met.
Mr. Grinlow, my name is Dawn Moore. I'm with RFA. I just wanted to make sure you got a chance to get a picture with our scholarship winner real quick.
I'd like to.
And then we'll get you. I can imagine you have to catch a flight pretty soon.
Well, I...